All Around Us by Reverend Nathan Langrack. The Christian Reformed Church replaces the Reformed formula of subscription. This year at the 2012 Synod of the Christian Reformed Church, after years of interviews, surveys, and revisions, the Form of Subscription Revision Committee presented its report and proposed replacement of Dort's venerable formula of subscription. The Synod of Dort, 1618-19, adopted the formula of subscription, and since then it has served as the standard of confessional subscription in Reformed churches. In lofty, sober, clear, and compelling language, the formula of subscription sets down which are the Reformed confessions, the place of confessions in Reformed churches, the nature of Reformed confessional subscription, and the penalty for the Reformed office bearer who refuses to subscribe or violates his subscription vow. It is a sobering exercise to read the formula. It is a solemn and sacred act to sign it. Every man who is Reformed in heart and confession gladly signs it. It has served the Reformed churches well since Dort. In periods of great reformations, Reformed churches have always returned to the formula, and with it to the creeds. On June 12, 2012, the Synod of the Christian Reformed Church unanimously set aside the formula of subscription and adopted a new covenant for office bearers. Thus, the Christian Reformed Church News reported, after years of deliberation and debate, the Christian Reformed Church has decided to set aside its historic form of subscription in favor of a new covenant for office bearers. The news report was correct. The Christian Reformed Church has set aside the covenant for office bearers is no revision of the formula, but is a setting aside, a replacement. It bears no resemblance to Dort's formula of subscription at all. It was not intended to. When the committee was originally formed in 2005, its mandate was clarifying the formula of subscription. The revision committee stated early on its understanding of its mandate. Clarification of the formula of subscription required a more thorough restatement rather than a minor update of the language. Taking the occasion for clarification, the committee simply defined that as thorough restatement. Synod agreed, and the committee thoroughly restated the idea of subscription, the place of creeds in the church, and the duty of office bearers toward those creeds. Whatever the covenant for office bearers is, it is not the formula of subscription. Whatever an office bearer does when he signs the covenant for office bearer, he does not subscribe to the Reformed creeds. The formula's long-standing opponents, who were crying for replacement of the formula of subscription already in the 1960s, those rebellious office bearers who refused to sign the formula of subscription, and the dishonest office bearers who signed it and broke their vows by teaching publicly or privately against the creeds, must be rejoicing. The Christian Reformed Church's adoption of the covenant for office bearers is a culminating act in a decades-long decline of the Christian Reformed denomination from the creedal, Reformed faith, and a signal victory for the forces of opposition to creedal orthodoxy within the Christian Reformed Church. The adoption of the covenant for office bearers is the natural outworking of previous synodical decisions. At the root is the synodical decision that misquoted the creeds and the class's abuse of the formula of subscription to depose unjustly faithful office bearers for their maintenance of the creedal doctrines of sovereign, particular grace, and their denial of common grace in 1924. The judgment on that ecclesiastical sin is the loss of subscription entirely. Closely related to the decision to adopt the covenant for office bearers is the 1976 decision of the Christian Reformed Church, incorporated into Article 5 of the Christian Reformed Church Church Order, which gutted subscription of any real meaning. Defining that solemn and sacred act, the Christian Reformed Church said that the subscriber does not, by subscription to the confessions, declare that these doctrines are all stated in the best possible manner, or that the standards of our church cover all that the Scriptures teach on the matters confessed. Putting its own slant on that decision, the revision committee said that The supplement to Church Order Article 5 already grants that one does not subscribe to the particular formulation of a doctrine as that formulation is expressed in the confession, but only to the doctrine itself. Since 1976 in the Christian Reformed Church, the understanding of the act of subscription is that an office bearer does not subscribe to the particular doctrinal formulations of the creeds. That was a fundamental departure from the Reformed understanding of subscription. The formula of subscription itself stands as a witness against that undermining of its language. That reckless attitude toward the formula of subscription came from tolerating the open opposition to the creeds from men who had subscribed to them, but broke their vow by openly criticizing the creeds and teaching contrary to the creeds. From Harold Decker to Harry Boor to many today, the formula for a long time has been a dead letter in the Christian Reformed Church. The chairman of the revision committee, James Decker, wrote in his blog, "The yearning to change or revise the formula of subscription within the Christian Reformed Church has been around since the early 1950s. Then Calvin College German professor Clarence Boersma presented a gravamen detailing his difficulties with signing the formula of subscription. Now the Christian Reformed Church expects office bearers who would not keep the formula to keep the covenant for office bearers." The origins of the current movement in the Christian Reformed Church to replace the formula of subscription are simply the logical development of this history, as recognized by the committee that proposed the covenant for office bearers. In 2003, Fleetwood Christian Reformed Church in Surrey, British Columbia, overturned Synod 2004 to study the efficacy of the form of subscription, on the grounds that many churches in that classis no longer use the formula of subscription because many individuals had difficulty signing it. The issue was that many flatly refused to use the formula, in rebellion against the clear stipulations of the church to which they belonged. Those who had difficulties with the formula were not disciplined, but were allowed to become office bearers without signing it. Having first officially abused it, then having officially undermined it, the Christian Reformed Church has now officially rejected the formula of subscription. Historically, this has been the way of apostasy for Reformed churches from Dort on. Whatever the merits or demerits of the document itself are, the origin of it determines that the covenant for office bearers will be a singular failure for the maintenance of Reformed orthodoxy in that denomination. As the committee itself admitted, the real issue was not the formula of subscription. The committee talked about those who had difficulties with the formula and those who did not like its language. The committee itself wanted a document with language that sings instead of plods along, language that is easily transportable across cultural and linguistic barriers and is not subject to misinterpretation. The committee insinuated that the formula was broken. But the language of the formula of subscription transported perfectly well from the Dutch and Latin of Dort into English and many other languages. Everyone understands what the formula of subscription requires. That is why some would not sign it. It is not unclear. It is not broken. The language of the formula of subscription is exalted, clear, and fitting for its stated purpose of being a personal vow of adherence to the creeds for the preservation of the uniformity and purity of doctrine that is vital to the existence of a Reformed Church. The issue was men who disagreed with the creeds and wanted an opportunity for open season on the creeds, which the formula of subscription does not officially allow. The grave offense of the formula of subscription is that, in crystal clear language, it sets forth the Reformed understanding of the place of the creeds in a Reformed church and the meaning of subscription to a creed, an understanding that long ago many who signed the formula neither agreed with nor practiced. The Synodical News Report also says that the Christian Reformed Church set aside its formula of subscription as though it was a parochial action of the Christian Reformed Church. But the formula of subscription is a possession of Reformed churches. Subscription to the three forms of a unity in the language of the formula of subscription is, according to Dort's definition, what it means for an office bearer to be reformed. The formula of subscription, as given and declared by Dort, marks who is and who is not reformed among the office bearers. By setting aside the historic Reformed formula, the Christian Reformed Church has separated herself from other Reformed churches and their official adherents to the Reformed creeds of Dort's formula of subscription. As such, she has lost the right to call herself Reformed. Barring the action of overturning this decision, the Christian Reformed Church is no longer officially a creedal Reformed Church in the accepted sense of the term. Apart from its origin, the covenant for office bearers itself is bad. The adoption of the covenant for office bearers officially opens the Christian Reformed Church to ecclesiastically sanctioned assaults on the creeds from all those in her midst who for years have chafed under the teachings of the creeds. Indeed, this is the expressed hope of the members of the Revision Committee. They talk about discussion, confessional vitality, and confessional engagement. The committee states that it recognized that the formula of subscription or any proposed revision of it was not the real issue. Rather, the deeper issue was that we begin what we hope will become an ongoing process of discussion and reflection on the confessions. The nature of confessional subscription and the renewal of confessional vitality. With this document, the committee says, they have taken a significant step away from the mere signing of a fixed document. The committee agreed that the purpose of any revision should be unity with a secondary concern for purity. According to the committee, signatories promised to engage in committed, candid, and loving conversation as a community about the doctrines we hold dear and their confessional articulations. The language of the covenant for office bearer encourages open, honest, respectful dialogue over questions that arise. According to the committee, any regulatory instrument that is adopted by the church ought to be regarded as an invitation to the office bearers of the church to participate in this ongoing reflection rather than a document that precludes or hinders such reflection. The bold separation of unity and purity and the willingness then to sacrifice purity for the sake of unity ought to alarm any Reformed person. It especially signals bad things when a committee for the revision of the formula of subscription talks this way. Unity and purity cannot be separated. The very name, Three Forms of Unity, for the collection of Reformed creeds indicates this impossibility. In purity of doctrine there is unity. Indeed, the formula's main concern is to preserve the uniformity and purity of doctrine, by which it shows its love for the unity of Christ's church. And this cries for the question, what is the ongoing discussion of and engagement with the creeds in the Christian Reformed Church, as envisioned by the Revision Committee, supposed to involve? The committee indicates that this discussion will involve dissent. The committee envisions that the covenant for office bearers will be a promise to work through disagreements and to openly and honestly deal with questions that arise, rather than to have the first reactions be to stifle dissent. According to the Revision Committee, the nature of this dissenting conversation on confessional questions and difficulties would involve what formerly an office bearer would be bound to express by gravamen. In explaining the choice of the word covenant in the name for the new document, the committee and many respondents considered that covenant both encouraged discussion and respected the honest confessional questions raised by those who might otherwise have been discouraged by the thought of facing a council, classis, or synod in a long process. That is, of a gravamen. The office bearer is free to disseminate and agitate for his dissent against the confessions, all in the name of discussions and conversation and without a gravamen. This is also the meaning of the language of the covenant for office bearer itself, which replaces Dort's statement concerning the responsibilities of office bearers. If hereafter any difficulties or different sentiments respecting the aforesaid doctrines should arise in our minds, We promise that we will neither publicly nor privately propose, teach, or defend the same, either by preaching or writing, until we have first revealed such sentiments to the consistory, classis, and synod, that the same may be there examined. Instead, the covenant for office bearers speaks about a promise to present or receive confessional difficulties in a spirit of love and fellowship with our brothers and sisters as together we seek a fuller understanding of the gospel. Dort's language assumes agreement with the creeds. By this language, the committee assumes that there are confessional difficulties, grave confessional difficulties that under the formula of subscription could be remedied only by gravamen. By this language, the covenant for office bearers invites open disagreement and dissent with the creeds. It not only commits the Christian Reformed Church to dissent with the creeds, but also sanctions open dissent with the creeds in the spirit of love and fellowship and a seeking of a fuller understanding of the gospel. It gives its blessing to opposition to the creeds. It does not stifle dissent, but encourages it. The signatories are committed to it. When it is not sanctioning dissent with the creeds, the covenant for office bearer frowns on disagreement with those who so assault the creeds as implicitly being out of accord with the spirit of love and fellowship and a desire to seek a fuller understanding of the gospel. The dissenter will be free to disseminate his dissent, and the hearer must meekly receive it. Opposition is virtually impossible, indeed, not loving. The Revision Committee's purpose of revitalizing confessional identity is not only an admission that denominationally the confessions are a dead letter, but also confuses confessional vitality with open criticism and debate about the creeds. If the Christian Reformed Church wanted confessional vitality, it would not have adopted the covenant for office bearers. It would insist that the office bearers sign the formula of subscription, or refusing that they be suspended from office. It would have insisted that office bearers who sign the formula teach the doctrines of the creeds. It would have insisted that office bearers who signed it preach the Heidelberg Catechism on Sunday. It would have insisted that no office bearer is free to contradict the doctrines of the creeds or simply to ignore them in his teaching, preaching, and writing. The way to confessional vitality is to uphold the formula of subscription, not to replace it. To be continued.